Support for Inside the Recording Studio comes from the heart of Dancin' Deer Studio, a gateway to great music making via a free podcast for your phone, tablet, computer, and ears. Making music that surrounds you.
There's something else going on in those different kits, be it percussion, be it something else.
From Dancin' Deer Studio, this is Inside the Recording Studio, where one song is broken down piece by piece, told week by week. I'm Jody Whitesides. For the last year, I've been spending an insane amount of time working on new songs and figuring out the direction I'd take each one of them in. That equates to hundreds of hours poring over little details in a song. If you want to get real technical about it, and I am, the details in a particular 3-minute and 21-second piece of music. This season, we'll examine a song that began its journey in late 2013. This labor of love started with a demo. For intensive purposes, this episode will be exploring the drums and percussion for a song called Touch. Where I'd like to start off is with the original drums I used to structure the song. Opening up the original demo file in Logic Pro 9, I see that there are two different plugins creating the core of the drum parts. The first is Ultrabeat by Logic. The other is RMX by Spectrasonics. The initial sounds come from the drum and bass kit number 2 inside Ultrabeat. Opening the plugin window shows that I likely used the pattern number 10 A1 sequence. I also used several of the variations in that area to get the verse and chorus parts together. The bridge has a significantly different pattern that also came from that same kit. I originally set up the Ultrabeat as a multi-out instrument. The rundown on that is, most of the sounds run out of the main stereo outs 1 and 2. There's a synth filter sound that runs out of the stereo out 3 and 4. There's a cow wobble sound that runs out of the stereo out 5-6. There's a kick solid sound that runs out of the stereo out 7-8. There's a snare sound that runs out of the stereo out 9-10. The RMX plugin was also set up as a multi-out instrument, using three particular loops from Spectrasonics libraries. Two of the parts are for the chorus, the first of which comes from the Groove Elements library inside Tambourines. It's sound 94 Baby Tam. The Baby Tam sound runs out stereo 1-2. The second sound also comes from Groove Elements inside the Shakers, which is sound 87 Shaker. The Shaker sound runs out of stereo 3-4. The third sound is used only in the ending of the bridge. It's from Groove Elements library Kicks 4x4 with sound number 120 Boomy Kick 3. And the Boomy Kick sound runs out of stereo 5-6. Additionally, I added an instance of the EXS, Logic Sampler plugin, to run a hand clap sound. The hand clap sound comes from the Clear Mountain Drums 2 library. It's sound 87 claps LGE1. The sound was used to enhance the 4 beat in the chorus. All of these plugins and their outputs were originally routed to a single aux channel for the drums. George Lizet III came in as a co-producer on the song once it was demoed. George and I had worked together on a previous song in the past, and I felt it would be prudent to get a second set of ears and the extra brain power on the song to take it to the next level. George Lizet is sitting in his lovely studio, Utopia Parkway Music. We're going to talk about the transformation of how this happened. So, George, first off, when you first got the original demo and you listened to it, what were your impressions of the drums and the percussion that I had sent you?
Well, initially I thought it was a good beginning. I felt that it was kind of lacking in the core, in the first verse. There weren't any drums. They didn't kick in until later. And a lot of the parts that were there would be considered decent demo parts. But as far as high quality, you know, ready to go tracks, I don't think I would have considered them that. So,
well, hence the reason they were a demo.
Yeah, but, you know, demos come to a person like me in a lot of different ways. I mean, sometimes they come as absolute basic nothingness. I mean, there's nothing there that you could call, you know, a final product, and other ones that you get where they come and they're complete. I mean, for me, all I have to do is take a look at perhaps adding some fills or some spiciness, but overall, as they come in, they're ready to go right away. And this song, it wasn't like that. It required some effort to get things moving along. But
right.
That was part of the fun of it as well.
Great. So initially, let's take a little walk through and figure out exactly what it is that got changed. What happened when you listened to the track and you said, hey, this is my approach. This is what I need to do. This is where we're going to start taking this. Why don't we take it from the verse? So that was the ultra beat part that comes in the verse.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, too, there's no kick and there's no snare, really.
That is correct.
At least not a super present one. That was one of the things that we went in and added later on as we were going along, was the fact that, you know, there wasn't enough. Kick and snare are really, really important in any tune, and particularly in a pop tune. You know, they really need to pop, they need to punch, they need to kick through, and they're the foundation of what people grab onto, or at least part of it. The hi-hat and the rest of the higher percussion is the other thing that I think they tend to pick up, you know, the highest and the bottom, and you fill in the music in the middle.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, the demo did not have really a substantial kick or snare. And once we actually got further along into the song, into the choruses, we actually decided to do a little kind of an R&B trick as well, where you have the drum beat go along, do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and then it stops on the four. So it's like one and two and three and four. So there's no end beat. So instead of having a bass or a kick or a guitar note or something in that little tiny eighth note hole, we filled that up with silence.
Right.
Or a little sound effect in, you know, the little poppy sound effect that you'd found, the little frog.
Right. In the verse, then, what we did, or what you did, or what we were planning on doing, was adding in a kick and a snare to give it a definite pattern.
Yeah. And then just keep that going through, because the part that was there already is fine. I mean, I think we even filtered it down to be less by the time we were in the cut.
Yes, we actually did.
The differences between that was, yeah, taking the kick and the snare, filtering through all the high-end percussion stuff and filtering it down to be a lot less initially so that we had something to build with when we hit the choruses.
Right. And essentially, we split everything out. The kick became its own separate instrument.
Yeah.
The snare became its own separate instrument. And yeah. I'm talking strictly about the verse here right now. And then in addition, we brought out the hi-hat ticks primarily just to be that. Mm-hmm. So we removed a lot of the extraneous percussion that was happening early on in the song, mm-hmm. and stripped it down to those three things.
Yeah.
And then when it hits the chorus, we stepped it up by adding additional things. We changed the kick. We added additional kicks.
Yep. There was a big, really heavy duty downbeat on the one kick.
Yes.
That was a big boo that you added.
Every two measures. Yeah. The DR kick 09 is what that is.
Which actually helps, again, it helps make that bounce of that little hi-hat missing beat thing work, too. Because you have it going boo on the downbeat of the one, and as it progresses through the two-bar thing, and at the end it goes, and then you hit the boo again. And it's really subtle, because it's not that present either. You don't really notice it unless you know it's there. And I bet you if people listened before and now listen again, they'll probably notice it. They may not have noticed it before because it's really deep. I mean, if you listen to it in headphones, you'll hear it. Or like a car, or if you're listening to it on your iPhone through your iDevice speakers, you're not going to hear it.
Right.
Which is actually one of the things that's a bit of a challenge, you know, these days for production and producers is we're dealing with such limited fidelity in the playback devices that we're dealing with. I find I have to keep in mind, is there going to be enough sound here so that when it plays back that people are going to be able to perceive that there's a part there doing something? So one of the things that becomes important about that is when you're mixing, you need to make sure that you roll off all your bottom end so you just hear the top end. So if you have something that's just generating a big like boo, that at least you hear a tick of it or some part of the higher component that's at least going to signal your ear on a small earbud that there is another sound there. So it becomes like a subliminal thing where your head goes, okay, well, there's something there. And then when you get on a bigger speaker, then you perceive the bottom end that goes along with it. Being aware of EQing something up in the upper end when you're doing your mixing is also really important so that you get it, that there's something even there.
When we come from the verse, which is sparsed out a little bit compared to the original demo with all the percussion-y things that were in there, and we hit the chorus, we've now changed the kick. We've added additional kicks. We've got the same snare. We've added a couple of effects to the snare so that the snare on a couple of the beats stands out entirely differently.
Mm-hmm.
We added back in some of the percussion. One of them is considered a frog sound, and mm-hmm. it sounds like
in
this.
In the hole.
So we get the little in the hole. And then we have a little bit more of a percussion track. In addition to, we used the Logic drum setup from Logic 10, where we added actual kit cymbals from the Logic kits. Do you remember which kit it was?
Yeah, it's Studio Kit.
Just plain old studio kit.
Yeah, they have a studio kit that's been there forever and ever, and it gets made better and better all the time. But that's right. The one I've used for years for hi-hats and cymbals. I mean, it's pretty natural sounding.
Right.
I'm trying to remember. I may have tried to use some of the newer ones, and if I did use those instead, it would have been the Bluebird kit.
The Bluebird kit.
I think. All
right. We also are adding more things in. There are some extra effects, like coming out of this first chorus, there's a little bit of a reverse cymbal effect that comes up and punches it to essentially silence for a beat.
Mm-hmm.
And then we come back in, the drums kick back in on a next verse, in which case the verse is pretty much the same thing, although halfway through, we added in a bit more of the percussion track again.
Yep.
To give a little bit more variance in that verse.
Yep.
And then we hit the second chorus, and it's pretty much like the first chorus, only we've got some slight variances in how things were played across the timing.
Right. I think we added more parts too, though, didn't we?
We added more of the snare effects where certain bits of the reverb on a couple of the hits happen after the snare hits, and there's a reverse reverb that comes in on a couple of the hits.
If you go from the first chorus, the second chorus, the third chorus, every single chorus, something is either being added or subtracted. That's not in one of the other ones, but is in a later one.
Yes.
You know, trying to keep the variance up. One of the things that Jody and I were focused on when we were going through this was making sure that the arrangement was interesting and was continually evolving. And, you know, one of the tricks that was suggested way back in recording school in the 30 years ago when I went pre-MIDI, the thing they said was always make sure every 4 to 8 bars, every 16 bars max, that there's something new. And usually it's every 4 bars I try and do something, even if it's just a hi-hat tick that's going tit, tit, tit. It's like tit, 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 tit. You know,
yes,
something even as subtle as that makes a huge difference to the ear. And anyways.
And that sparks my memory of what exactly happened, because I do remember you going through the hi-hat track.
Mm-hmm.
Very specifically, and changing out certain hits in the hi-hats.
Yep. Yeah, just making it interesting.
Very meticulous on that, because there's a lot of stuff going on in that hi-hat track.
Well, it's funny, you know, it's like one of the things I remember when I first started programming drums, because I was a drum player first. It was one of the basic start-off instruments for me. other than tuba.
Yes, I played tuba.
But the thing about it was when I was recording versus playing programming, it gets so easy to rely on the fact that you can just repeat stuff over and over again. You don't want to do that.
No, cut and paste is the devil.
At least I don't think you do. It makes it your music, I think, becomes a lot more interesting when you get to be not necessarily, you know, overly analytical, but meticulous at the same time, trying to make sure that you've got something that's not static.
Right. As if it was played all the way through, like a real player would play it, not just cutting and pasting each section one.
Well, yeah,
after
but
the
you know, some real players aren't that good either. So programming gives us the luxury of taking what a player might have done and upgrading it. And even in some of the other songs with real drummers, I think we used additional components that we added into what their performance was in order to make it a better performance overall. But in this song, it wasn't so.
Well, and the big section for this song where things changed pretty drastically happens to be the bridge.
Yep. That's where it really, really gets interesting because we deviated from the main kick snare vibe that we were doing through the rest of the song that kept it propelled moving forward and forward. And I think it's a half beat thing, isn't it? Or it's a...
Well, what ends up happening is there's actually two different kick patterns going on.
Right.
There's one kick pattern that is quite busy with a much thinner sounding kick.
Right.
To keep to get the level of intensity going up. And then there's a second kick that's much deeper,
yep,
playing as an alternate pattern that complements the original pattern that's much more busy, but mm-hmm, it's more sparse in where it's hitting.
Well, you kind of had this Indian vibe going that you wanted to make sure that you didn't lose either. I think we were kind of pushing that a little further along as we were going too.
Right. I think there were some elements from the original bridge piece that got removed and others that got added.
Yeah.
I know that in terms of the snare sounds, we added additional snares in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
There's the original snare sound that plays throughout the entire song. Then there's an actual layered in for just the bridge, its own separate snare sound that goes in with it. On top of that, along with that, I have two alternate type of snare sounds, one panned left, one panned right.
Mm-hmm.
To complement it even further in a stereo aspect. Then beyond that, I went kind of a little bit overboard and I did an in-breath type sound that comes into each snare hit on the two and the four. Or actually, it's only on the two, I think. And then on the opposite end of that, there's a breath out, mm-hmm, that happens. So there's all kinds of layers going on with that. Additional claps, additional weird percussion that's more of the Indian-esque
thing. There's a ton of stuff. It's pretty neat, actually.
Plus, on top of that, we changed out the shaker that was happening from the rest of the song. It's a different sound with a slightly different pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Some additional finger cymbals come in. And on top of that, for the little bit of the hip-hop element, we've got one of those record scratches happening. So all of these things are going on within the bridge and make it a very busy percussion area for the song.
Yeah, but it also supports all the other parts that are going along too. I think that there's a bass part that kind of goes along that's a lot mellower, but the percussion parts and the drum elements keep that particular section moving even though it's half time compared to what everything else was.
Right, right.
Because it's way busier now. The percussion component, the high end, gets much, much more active.
Right, and the snare actually does move to a halftime feel, right, which is exactly what you were just saying.
Yeah.
So, and then from there, we move into a breakdown chorus,
mm-hmm,
where everything kind of becomes a little more sparse, whether it's the drums and the percussion, which a lot of the percussion falls out by the wayside in this section, and it becomes primarily kick and snare. There is a cabasa that comes in. There's a cowbell come in. Almost thinking the Saturday Night Live performance with Will Ferrell, must have cowbell kind of thing going on. And more cowbell at that. So
more
there's
cowbell,
also a
heavy cowbell.
Right, more cowbell. There is also a Heaviosity track that adds some additional percussion elements in the very low registers of what's going on in terms of the volume in that section as well.
Mm-hmm.
It adds some additional elements of fun. And then, of course, the song comes out and ends with a full-blown double chorus where everything comes flying back in with additional elements from a couple of elements from the bridge sneaking in on the final chorus. And then the song ends with a nice big boom.
Mm-hmm.
At the end, right on the downbeat of one. Stop. No fade out, no long running ending. It's just the drums say time to end.
Mm-hmm.
As far as coming into doing this and going through where we brought it to the final mix, is there anything that you want to talk about in terms of like the effects that were used on drum channels, how we ended up doing the busing, anything like that?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how much detail you might want to get into something like that, because basically that becomes more of a mixing element and
right. And we do have a mixing episode coming up, so we probably should leave that for the mix episode.
Yeah, because there's, once you get there, you know, we're doing subgrouping for every component of the record, and vocals, drums, bass, guitars, keyboards are all having their own separate channel elements. So, and some of those even get subgrouped in, you know, like the guitars are clean guitars, dirty guitars, lead guitars.
Right.
Everything gets subgrouped and treated and made somehow interesting. But yeah, through subgroups. Yeah, I think we have a lot to talk about, but I think it would be better suited for
the mixing episode.
Yeah.
All right.
But, you know, the bottom line is it's a fun song to do. It's really high tempo, even though it's not, you know, it's high energy for a medium tempo track. And it was a lot of fun to do. Again, focused really on trying to make sure that the bass line, which was the main hook of the song, was being supported by the drums and the percussion as well. So that was really something that was important to focus on. But when we talk more about the bass, we'll get into more how they work together.
And right there, we'll take it for the next episode, where we will be talking about the bass. Not like Megan Trenor. It's not all about that bass. About that bass. About that bass. Inside the Recording Studio is produced by John Michael Kane, George Leger, and I. Frank Cadillac is the production and operations manager. Alex Hitchens is our editorial advisor. Editing help comes from Harrison Knightley. Plug-in and regions checking by TJ Burke. Special thanks for this episode goes to Apple, Eric Persing and Spectrasonics, Universal Audio, Bob Clearmountain, plus the staff at Dancing Deer Studio and Utopia Parkway Studio. I mustn't forget Robert Navarro for putting up with me while I was running around recording this song. Support for Inside the Recording Studio comes from Jody Whitesides, who asks you to stream the song Touch on Spotify, make a purchase of it on iTunes, or donate to the podcast. Subscribe to the RSS feed for Inside the Recording Studio or subscribe to our channel on YouTube. Inside the Recording Studio is a production of Dancing Deer Studio.